good for you.
So the end of Perakof Aleph, we were looking at David running from Shaul and running to different places. And so the first place he goes to is after he comes to Nov, and they have the whole conversation with Achimah, with the Kohen in Nov. Achimelech from the house of Eli. Then he moved and he went south. The first place he went to was Achish and Melech Gat, in the area of Eretz Plishtim. We good?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. First place he goes to is to Eretz Plishtim. Remember, we're here. He comes from area of Nov, which is just north of Yerushalayim. And he goes running to Gat, crosses across to Eretz Plishtim in order to escape from Shaul. And we had a whole discussion about why he runs to Eretz Plishtim and what he was expecting in Eretz Plishtim. Why would he run to the land of the enemy, either to escape, the last place in the world that Shaul is going to either try to look for him or able to look for him. If he can manage to sneak in unnoticed, or even if he manages to sneak in notice, but give them the impression that he's changed sides, whatever his plan was, it doesn't quite work for him. They recognize him, they recognize the sword of Goliath, and they throw him out. They literally throw him out, Vayigasheyu Vayelach, as we saw in Tehillim. And from there, he will begin to migrate his way across Eretz Yehuda. And first he makes a stop in Eretz Adulam or Ma'arat Adulam. And I think I even gave you this map, which we're going to need. So if you don't have it, take a copy of it. Actually, leave me one copy. Thank you. And this colored map was also helpful. I don't know if you saw this one yet. Can you look at this one? Okay, so this is also helpful. Yeah, it's just a kind of a different perspective on where he's going. Marat Adulam. If you have.
Alright, you guys have to share.
Thank you.
That's why I tell people not to take it, because
I passed mine back.
I always
mine. It's okay. It's okay. Not a problem. I didn't make that many copies of the colored one anyway, because it cost more money. But the first place from leaving Eretz Gat. Welcome back to Monday. It's all good. First place he goes to from Eretz Gat or Eretz Plishtim is to Marat Adulam, which is, as we discussed it, which is on the border between Eretz Plishtim and Eretz Yehuda. The border being a somewhat safer place to kind of gather around him. And we spent last week discussing the next pasuk, which is beginning of Parakha Bet, Vayelach Misham Vayimalet Amarat Adulam, Vayishmu Achav Vachobet Aviv Vayardu Elav Shama, the family that comes to him will come back to in a moment, Vayitkabtsu Elav Kol Ish Matzok V'chol Ish Shelo Noshe V'chol Ish Marnafesh Vayalahem Lesar Vayuimo Karbamiot Ish. Gathers around him a group of 400 people, who are bitter, who are impoverished, who are dealing with creditors, who have no land, who have no parnasa, who kind of malcontents, as they describe them here, right? And they gather, and that'll become David's fighting force, that'll become his gedud, they will become his little army, his private little army, literally, and he becomes their leader, vayi alehem, Lissa. And what we discussed last week was the beginning of David's position of leadership and the rise of his role as their leader. You know, what will eventually become his army and eventually even his malchus, right? This is the beginning of that rise from the fugitive status to a leader amongst, and now fill in the blank, leader amongst his little gedud, and then a leader amongst Shevet Yehuda, and eventually all of Israel will come to recognize him as their leader. But this is the start of that climb of David up the scale of leadership as Shaul is sinking into the abyss of his own paranoia and personal war with David. David's position is beginning to rise.
I'm sure I've asked you before, but now, how about what age are we in his?
So we don't know. What we do know is that the entire story of Shmuel Aleph, until the death of Shaul, and the death of Shaul begins, end of Shmuel Aleph, beginning of Shmuel Bet, Shaul, David takes on an official position of Melech in Hebron, in Shevet Yehuda, for 7 years, and then he, 7 years after, later, when the war with Shaul's descendants, etc., ends, he becomes king of all of Israel. We know that David reigns for 40 years, from Hebron and Yerushalayim combined is 40 years, and he dies at the age of 70. So beginning of Shmuel Bet, he's 30 years old. Where he is now, we don't know, because we don't know how long that period takes. It's unclear.
He's young.
In his 20s. Yeah, put it into those terms, he's in his 20s. He's a young warrior. He certainly has proven himself on the battlefield many times, and particularly against the Plishtim.
Look how much energy the guy's got, and certainly
to be on the run, to be in hiding, to be a leader of a group of a band of this group that's literally hiding in the woods. This takes a toll, and this is where David's leadership is forged. Now it's interesting. The perception here is that this is all happening in sequence. The problem with it happening in sequence is we're about to go back to the story of Nov. Not today, but next week. We're going to go back to the story of Nov, which means we left the story of Nov, and we followed David on his little journey around, down to Melech Gat, and now back to Marat Adulam, gathering around him a force of 400 men. I can't believe that he could gather around him a force of 400 men in 24 hours. It reads like it's in sequence, but in fact it would be a process that I think would have to take some time. And yet the story, the framework of this, of these two chapters, what we call the Sipur Misgeret, the framework of this whole context, is the story of Nov. Right? David comes to Nov, Doeg Adomi informs to Shaul, informs on David, and Shaul comes back to pour out his wrath on Nov and will destroy Nov. And all of that is happening in the framework of the story, chapter 21 and chapter 22. In the meantime, in the middle of this, we have these episodes, little vignettes of David's journey to Achish Melech Gat, Marat Adulam, and eventually back to Eretz Moab, which was going to be our subject today. Right. So I don't think that it's hard to suggest that this is all happening in sequence, because the time frame here is too difficult. Right? For him to travel all the way to Gat, then Marat Adulam, then gather around him force of 400 men, then travel all the way to Moab, and then come back, all in the same time frame that Doeg Adomi informs to Shaul about Nob, and Shaul goes and he kills the people of Nob. It sounds to me like we're kind of took one story, and in the midst of that story, we digressed into a bunch of other stories that take place over the course of time, and then go back to the story where we had started. The question that, if that is true, the question that we need to ask is why? Why interrupt the flow of the story of Nov to come back to all, to go into all of these other episodes of David's journey? I don't think that's an arbitrary question. I think that is a very significant issue. So we'll have to explore that. Do you understand where my problem lies? Okay, we're going to come back to the story of Nov, but in the meantime, David's journey takes us much longer, time-wise, than the story of Nov did. Where it fits into that picture, we'll have to see. Okay, everybody with us? We have all our pages. Actually, the only other page you'll need is the source page, if you didn't get it, or if you returned it. One or the other, you'll need that too.
You bring your notebook every time. You guys send it down there.
All right. We're going to keep our eye on the map, too, so we, as we go through this. So let's go back to the beginning of Perek Chabet. Beginning of Perek Chabet. We're going to, again, because the stories are happening out of sequence, we're looking at them out of sequence. But today's focus is Moav. That's the next piece of it. Vayelech David misham vayimaleh tamarat adulam. As we said, David goes and he comes to the border of Eretz Plishtim and Eretz Yehuda, to this cave of Adulam. Vayishmu echav v'cho bet aviv vayirdu elav shama. His household, his family, his whole house, all of his brethren, they all come down to him in Marat Adulam. It's almost as if on his way back from Eretz Gat, he makes a stopover to kind of gather together with his family. Where is his family coming from?
Beit Lechem.
Beit Lechem. His family is in Beit Lechem Yehuda. David comes from Beit Lechem Yehuda. So if you look at the black and white map, you'll see Adulam is listed there, right near the box that says Malcontents Gather Around David. I love that phrase. And north of that box, you'll see Beit Lechem. So he had gone from Nov to Gat. He's headed on a trajectory southeast down towards Eretz Moav. We're going to come to that in a second. But in the meantime, he stops in Marat Adulam, which I guess is a safe place. It's on the border. And there he gathers together, besides all of the people that we're going to read about in the next pasuk, he gathers his family. Why does he gather his family?
They're vulnerable.
Because the family is in danger. Running from Beit Lechem, running from Shaul in the way he did, not coming to the feast, public declaration of, or public act of insubordination, etc. Shaul has now declared a public war on David, looking for spies, looking for informants, looking for people to rout him out. The most vulnerable people in that circle are going to be his members of his own family. And Shaul knows exactly where his family is. And Shaul knows exactly where he is. So his family has to go into hiding. So in the meantime, while he's running back from Eretz Gat, his family is coming from Beit Lechem and meeting him there in Marat Adulam. And we have this reunification, if you will, of David and his family.
Who's his family?
His father is Yishai, his six brothers. I'm assuming there are a few more along the way, households, etc. We don't know the we know the names of his brothers from the parak where we first met David, but that's his family, his parents, his brothers, his family. Vayitkabtzu elav kol ish matzok v'chol ish asher lo noshe v'chol ish mar nafesh v'hi aleihem lesa v'yu imo k'arba meot ish. That's the pasuk we talked about last week. The gathering together of his 400 of his men, which turns out to a band of 400 men, and I suspect that that's what I just said. It takes time, right? So we're moving. This time frame is moving beyond the story of Nov, but it's connected. So essentially, at this point in time, David is traveling, or moving, or migrating, or living with two groups: his family on the one hand, and his gedud. We're going to call them his gedud for lack of a better term. That sounds much better than his malcontents. Right? And his gedud on the other, especially because I don't believe that the typical description of a malcontent is somebody which is a pejorative. Mm-hmm. What we discussed last week was that these are all people who are sort of victims of the power of the king, right? Victims of the force of the king. The land is confiscated from them. They have creditors and debts, and Parnassus didn't go well, so their farms were taken and their people were taken. These are people who are very embittered, and the blame or the focus of their bitterness is Shaul. And that also plays a role later in the story when they try to kill Shaul, and David is the one who stops them. Right? David is always their moral compass. But at this point in time, he has two groups of people. He has his gedud, and he has his family.
So the 400 doesn't include his family?
Correct. The 400 is the gedud. Okay. And then he has his family. The problem with the problem he's challenged with is an obvious one. He's a fugitive. He's on the run. And he needs an army with which to protect himself and to protect his family. The areas. But his family, to some extent for him, is they could be helpful in the war, but there can also be a liability.
Now they're, he's traveling with so many people.
Well, it's not only numbers, it's also recognition. Right? The malcontents have been sort of, you know, you have people who are landless, etc., who live in the area. But David, to have all of his members of his family, all of his members of his household, he's a fugitive on the run and in hiding underground. It is hard to hide all of those members of his family. And he's keenly aware that Shaul is looking for him high and low. So he has a dilemma. What does he do with his family? He's gathered them together. He's trying to protect them. What does he do with them? Let them travel around in his band with them as they go through Eretz Yehuda and hiding? Unclear. He needs a place to hide them. And so he turns in the next, and this is where the story begins. It's a very short story. Vayelech David Misham, Mitzpe Moav. He goes to Mitzpe Moav. Now, Mitzpe Moav is a subject of discussion. Where and what is Mitzpe Moav? So, and he's going to have a conversation with the king of Moav. Vayome el melech Moav. Actually, let's look at the story first, and then we'll come back to it. It's two psukim. Vayelech David Misham Mitzpe Moav. He goes from there to Mitzpe Moav. Vayome el melech Moav, says to the king, Yetzena avi ve'imi itchem ad asher eda ma yaseh li Elokim. Let my father and my mother, I assume the rest of my family, stay here with you until I know what my fate is. Okay? In other words, he's looking for a place, a safe place, where Shaul can't reach. Last time he went to Eretz Plishtim, where Shaul couldn't reach. Now he goes to Eretz Moav. Again, a place where Shaul can't reach. Plishtim, Moav, these are nations that Shaul had fought against. These are enemies of Shaul. And so he goes to Eretz Moav with the understanding that he can protect his family there from the reaches of Shaul. And there, and that's what he does. He deposits his family there. Ad asher eda ma yaseh li Elokim. Vayanchem et pnei melech Moav. Right, they become the beseeches the king of Moav. Vayeshvu imo, and they dwell there. Kol yemei yotot David b'mtsuda, all the days of David's sojourn in the fortress. One more pasuk. Vayomer Gad hanavi el David. Lo teshev b'mtsuda, lech uvata lecha eretz Yehuda, v'elech David v'yavo ya'ar charet. God, the Navi, says to David, enough hiding in the fortress, it's time for you to come to Eretz Yehuda. And so from there he goes and he travels to ya'ar charet. So there's a lot to discuss in these three psukim. What is the mitzuda? What is Mitzpeh, where is Mitzpe Moav? Where is he? Why is he hiding? Who is God the Navi and how he comes into the picture? And what does he do with his family? What's going on here?
Why would Moav take them in?
There's lots of questions.
It's a far distance.
He's got to cross. Now, yeah, if he's going all the way there, it's Moav. He's got to cross all the way to over here. So there is a discussion as to where Mitzpe Moav is. And some suggest, Rashi, for example, says Samuch leMoav. Mitzpe Moav is somewhere in or near the land of Moav, which again is a difficult journey to take, and it doesn't actually say that he crosses the Jordan. So it's unclear that he's entering into Eretz Moav itself. It's possible. But the other suggestion, which is made by the Radak, which is that that's the wrong Radak. All right, doesn't matter. But it is that Mitzpe Moav is not in Eretz Moav, but in fact still in Eretz Yehuda, which to some extent makes more sense, that he doesn't actually cross out of Eretz Yehuda into Eretz Moav, but he comes to Mitzpeh Moav. What is a Mitzpeh?
It's an outlook.
It's an outlook. It's a hilltop. It's an area that overlooks a region. So Mitzpeh Moav is either a hilltop in Moav that overlooks Eretz Yehuda, which is possible, which would make sense for David to try to cross into a safe place in Eretz Moav and come and sort of to be there and protect, leave his family there and kind of use that as a safe harbor until God comes to him and he says to him, enough, hiding in this place of Mitzpeh Moav, come back to Eretz Yehuda, Vatalachal Eretz Yehuda. Right? God is one who says to him, it's time to come back to your land, to your territory, to your tribe, to Eretz Yehuda. So actually, I got them, it's backwards. Radak is the one who says that he's still in Eretz Yehuda, that he's in Eretz Yehuda. Rashi is the one who says that he's Samuch Lamoav, which means probably somewhere around here on the border. But the other suggestion, which is quite possible, is that he's in Mitzpeh Moav, a large hilltop fortress overlooking Eretz Moav, but still on the border, the Israel side of the border. Large fortress-style hilltop overlooking Moav on the west side of the Jordan River would put him somewhere in the area of
Qumran, Masada.
Right? It's a big hill, big fortress. So it's unclear if it's that hill or another hill, but that region, if you think about what Masada was, it's a large hill, could easily be a fortress, it certainly became a fortress many years later, that overlooks the region, strategic. That kind of place, east side of the Jordan in Eretz Moab, west side of the Jordan in the border of Eretz Yehuda, either way, Mitzpeh Moav, there David is looking to hide under the umbrella of the protection of Melech Moav, with the understanding that Melech Moav is going to help him protect his family. And again, come back to the sequence here. This is a story that's taking place over time. I can't believe that all of this is happening within 3 days of the story of Noah, right? That this is progression over time. Why did you go to Moav? Why Moav? Talked about Eretz Plishtim. He has a sword of Goliath. Thinks he can get through to Eretz Plishtim. Why Moav?
Same reason as Plishtim?
Possibly. Same reason as Plishtim, possibly. Right. Right? It's one of the cities, one of the nations that Shaul has warred against, has fought against. Possibly an area that would protect him because, right, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Possibly it's an area that Shaul has no access to. Right. All true, and in which case
and
this would be,
which would
explain to some extent the sequence of events here. The sequence of events here are included here, even though they're out of time, out of sync, because it's a series of stories of David hiding amongst foreign powers. Goes to Eretz Plishtim, goes to Eretz Moav, until the Navi comes to him and he says, enough. Okay, you've been hiding out amongst foreign powers too long. It's time for you to go back to Eretz Yehuda, because there in Eretz Yehuda, you're going to begin to build up your leadership, your loyal constituents. Right there, you need to begin to establish yourself. Enough hiding in the land of the enemy. If you take a look at the Radak, it's a beautiful Radak. So why is David hiding amongst foreign powers? Because he's afraid. What's he afraid of?
Getting killed.
Right, that locally, the local population is unsafe, because that Shaul has access to, and somebody there, like, and again, assuming that the stories are out of sequence, it makes more sense, just like in Nov, somebody who recognized him, informed on him, and the tragedy, the result was the tragedy of the destruction of Nov, a story we still have to read, but it's there. So David is living in that fear that anywhere he goes where there's people that can recognize him, are likely to inform on him. And it's unsafe for them, it's unsafe for him. So the only safe place for him is to go outside of the boundaries of the land of Israel. If this is happening after the tragedy of Noah, it actually has an even greater rationale. Says the Radak, that's what the Navi comes and tells him. Take a look on the top left of the column. It says Radak. Pasakei, Vatel Chal Eretz Yehuda. Al Pi Hashem Amar Lo. The Navi speaks in the name of God. Ki Sham Ye Nishmar Min Shaul. He assured him that there, in the land of Yehuda, he will be protected from Shaul. V'chein haya. All the time that he was in Eretz Yehuda, whether it be Marat Adulam or later on in Yarcharet, as long as David is floating around in Eretz Yehuda, Shaul can't find him. There are moments when he pops up for various reasons, but ultimately Eretz Yehuda is a very safe place for him to hide. Shaul can't reach him there. In Eretz Yehuda, David is amongst peers. He's amongst friends. He's amongst his own tribesmen. They're not informing on him to Shaul. They're informing on Shaul to him. Their loyalty is far greater, more to David than it is to Shaul. But that's a lesson David has to learn, and he has to rehear it from the Navi, because the experience in Nov was disastrous. So he has to hear from the Navi, Eretz Yehuda is a safe place, and the people there will protect you. It's enough hiding in the Mitzudah, you need to come back to begin to focus in Eretz Yehuda. What happens in Keilah, we'll see. Keilah is far from Eretz Yehuda, Keilah is far from his family, and ultimately he went there by God's command, and it was a moment where he kind of popped up onto the radar of Shaul. But as long as he's inside Eretz Yehuda, it's like a blanket of electronic surveillance that Shaul can't penetrate. Right? Shaul, Eretz Yehuda is going to protect him. Yeah.
Question. The Navi comes to tell him, come back to Yehuda.
I don't know who comes. The Navi's with him. God is with him.
I was going to ask you, is the Navi like traveling with him?
Yes. God travels with him. There are three Navi'im in Sefer Shmuel. Shmuel, we encountered, right, lives in Ramat, in Givat Shaul, is a Navi essentially of Shaul. Natan, which is the Navi that will accompany David or become David's Navi as long from the day that he enters to Yerushalayim. And until David reaches Yerushalayim, the Navi who goes with him from place to place and accompanies him throughout the journey is God. God's always with him. And we only know two places in the Sefer where God appears. Okay, the conversation, after distinguishing God and God, right? The conversation between David and the God appears in twice. Here, and at the end of Sefer Shmuel Bet, but I think we talked about the fact that those chapters at the end are out of order. And God is the Navi of his journey. So as long as he's a fugitive, God is with him throughout this period of time. It's not like he comes to him. It doesn't say, Yavo God Ela.
How does he know where he is?
Right, no, God is with him. He runs, and he has two critical spiritual anchors that are with him throughout this period of time. One is the Navi, God, and the other is the Kohen Gadol. But that's the aftermath of the story of Nov, which we haven't gotten to yet. That the remnant of the fall of Nov comes running to him and hides with him.
How do we know that God stayed with him all the time? We only have two sources.
That's the assumption. That's the assumption. There's no otherwise. Otherwise, where would he find him? How would he get to him? We don't know anything about him. It's not like he shows up and he's. We tell the story of God comes to God and says to him, go to David. Right? We don't have that. We just have God is there.
Rabbi, does that mean the prophet doesn't have a family either because he's just running around with devil?
We don't know. Yes. We don't know anything about God. Yeah. We have Midrashim, I would assume, but in the text we only find his name mentioned twice.
Are all these paths known to everybody? I mean, he's zigzagging all over the place.
Well, this hasn't happened yet. Happened yet.
Do people know how to get from here to there?
Yeah, there's some roads.
There are roads.
Yes.
I have
I'm sorry. I have a note next to Adu Lam where I wrote Mitzpemoav. Was that a mistake or was there?
No, Mitzpemoav is after Adu Lam. It comes from Adu Lam to Mitzpemoav. If you look at this map,
Mitzpemoav in across the sea.
Well, so that's debatable, whether it's across the street or not across the sea. It's either one. So if you look at the map, if you look at the black and white map for a moment, you'll see, follow from Adulam, the number 5.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And you'll see it comes all the way down to
the stronghold
of En Gedi, or it goes through that. It goes into the stronghold,
Mitzada.
Don't stay in the Mitsuda. Mitsuda could be a reference to Masada, right? Which is probably where Masada gets its name from, right? It's called the stronghold of Mitzada, and that, according to this map, that's where David is. However, he transfers his parents to the land of Moab. That's number 6. Right. That's kind of this reference. So he has either by a messenger or negotiation or conversation. Yes, he goes to Eretz Moab and comes back. It's not sure, but that's where the Navi comes to him and he says. Or the Navi is with him. The Navi says to him, enough hiding in the stronghold, time for you to come back. And so from number 7, we have him journey all the way back to Ki'ilah. Ki'ilah we'll come back to. That's another story. Okay, but that's the journey. So he comes all the way into these other stories in the middle kind of lines distract, which is why I gave you this map. Because here you can see it. He comes from Nov to to Gat, from Gat he comes to Adulam, from Adulam he'll cut across to Mitzada or En Gedi, right, the stronghold of Moab, transfers family across the border to Eretz Moab, and then eventually on the word of God come back. We have no idea how long he's hiding in Mitzada. It doesn't say. All we know is that God says to him, don't stay in Mitzuda. How long he's there, again, the chronology here is unclear. My suspicion is that all of this is after the fall of Nov, which is why David's initial reaction is a much greater heightened sense of fear because of the aftermath, because of the tragedy of Nov. You know what? It's worth reading. We haven't read the rest of this paragraph, right? We haven't read the story of Nov.
Before Nov.
So I want to come back to the story of Moab. All right, no, we're not going to be able to do that both. All right, let's focus on Moab today. We'll read the story of Nov afterwards. There's one pasuk in there we'll need, but we'll come back to it. But we started to ask the question of why he goes to Moab, and we suggested strategically and tactically there's a rationale for going to Moab. But under the circumstances of David, I think there's another reason for going to Moab that is unique to David. In an expectation of why he would deposit there his family.
Because of his great ancestor Ruth?
Right. Because remember that David is the great-grandson of Ruth, right. Who comes from Moab. So to a large extent, there's a family connection to Ruth. Now, it's a family connection that goes back multiple generations. But at least on the expectation David has, he can go to Moab and say, look, my family's here, we're family. Family is, what's the expression? Blood is thicker than water. Great-great-great-grandmother or great-grandmother is Ruth the Moabiah. You take care of my family. I suspect he was hoping for some element of Moab's hospitality because of the history of Ruth and her background, Ruth Moabiah, great chesed, etc. I think he was expecting some kind of reciprocity to the story of Ruth. If that was true, then it is a big and tragic mistake. One of the most tragic mistakes David will make in his life. It will be a mistake that will haunt him the rest of his life.
Was to take his family there.
Was to leave his family in Moab. And there's a remarkable medrash about the story. Before we get to the medrash, I want to work through the text and show you where I think the pshat of the text leads us to the same direction that the medrash does.
Well,
Why didn't he get help from Hashem in this case? I mean, he helps him all the time.
All right, so let's see. What happens to his family in Moab?
They kill him.
So you obviously know what's coming up, okay? Because it's not on the text. All we know in the story is we don't know anything about what happens to his family in Moab. There is no reference ever, again, to any part of the story of his family in Moab. Rashi makes that comment that we never hear from them again. There's no reference to him going back to Moab, collecting his family, going engaging with Malach Moab. We know nothing. They simply disappear from the story. He leaves his family with Malach Moab, and we, in no point in the rest of Tanakh, do we ever hear again any conversation or engagement with his family in Moab. Question mark number one. Question mark number two is that David, years later, when he becomes king, and he has to engage in various battles, has to engage with various forces around, with Melech Plishtim, with Melech Moab, and Melech Ammon, with all of these different forces that he does. So I want to take a glimpse for a moment at Shmuel Bet. Shmuel Bet Perek Chet, beginning of Perek Chet. David is king. David is king. David is fighting various battles. Pasuk Perek Chet, beginning of the Perek. Vahi achrechen, vayach David et plishtim meyachnie. David becomes king, and he's king over all of Israel. Perek Zion is the famous Perek where he wants to build the Beit HaMikdash, and Natan HaNavi tells him no. Right, that's the previous parak. So he continues his campaigns to expand the borders of the land of Israel. Conquers the Plishtim, he subdues them, he fights with them, and he's victorious. Next, there's a list of battles. Vayachat Moav. He smote Moav. Vayimadadem bechevel hashkem otam arza. Vayemaded shnei chavalim lahamit umelo achevel lahachayot. Vatehid Moav leDavid laAvadim nasim mincha. It is a difficult pasuk, but the short of it is that he takes the warriors of Moav. Geneva Convention had not yet been written, and he lies them down, and anybody who is a certain height he executes.
Sounds cruel.
Yeah.
And he literally destroys, he executes a whole sector of the army of Moab. The rest of them he turns into Moab.
But that's where his parents are supposed to be a family.
That's where his parents are supposed to be a family.
What
is
the rest of them?
And the rest of them he turns into slaves or servants. Vayi Moav leDavid lavadim. Then we have another story. Vayach David et Hadad Ezer ben Rechov Melech Tzova. He comes to the king of Tzova. You asked me about the Ram Tzova before. Vilechto lahashiv yado benahar prat, vayolkot David mimenu elef ushvamiot parashim yasim elef ishragli. And he begins to expand his kingdom all the way up north into the area of Aram Tzova, into what is today Syria, and into the area of up to Nahar Prat, and expand the borders of the land of Israel northward as well as west and east. But nowhere is the description of his of the response, the cruelty with which he deals with the subdued army, as it is with Moav. Moav he treats with exceptional cruelty. Unclear why. Oh. Now, just to make light more interesting,
never find out.
Unclear why. We're going to conjecture in a second, but it's unclear why. Now, I add to that the fact that we typically see Ammon and Moav. If you remember back to Sefer Shoftim, Ammon and Moab were always perceived as sister nations, cousin nations, nations in partnership. Sometimes they were unified. Sometimes they were one nation. Sometimes they were, in Sefer Shoftim, they were always perceived as one people. That you could be fighting Ammon and fighting Moab, and they were back and forth. Sefer Shmuel, they're two separate nations. And as cruel as he is to Melech Moab, ironically, he's far more considerate, compassionate, and kind to Melech Ammon. Take a look, for example, in Perek Yud. Beginning of Perek Yud. Vahi achrechein v'yamot melech b'nei Ammon, king of Ammon. Beginning of Perek Yud. Beginning of Perek Yud. First pasuk.
Chapter 10.
Yes. Vahi achrechein v'yamot melech b'nei Ammon, king of b'nei Ammon died. Vayimloch Chanun ben Otachtav, Chanun ben Nachash. The king of Ammon is a man by the name of Nachash, Melech ben Ammon. His son Chanun
is the new king.
Vayomer David, Eseh Chesed im Chanun ben Nachash, Kasher Asa Aviv Imadi Chesed. I am going to repay him in kindness, the way he repaid his father repaid me in kindness. He went and he sent a delegation to be Menachem. And they come to Eretz B'nei Ammon. What happened to them there is not our issue for now. They didn't treat him quite with the same kindness that his father did. But the notion that David, Nachash Melech B'nei Ammon died, and David's immediate gut reactions, a foreign power on the other side of the yard, and after he executed all of the people of army of Moab, he's going to send a Nicham Avelim delegation to the Melech Ben Ammon. Why would he treat Melech Ben Ammon with such kindness, such compassion, such consideration, and Melech Moab, sister nation, both daughters, both born from the children of Lot, right? Lot and his daughters, right? Cousin nations at various times in history, one unified people. Why would he treat Moab so cruelly and Ammon so kindly? It's a mystery.
Well, maybe he knew that they killed all his family.
Right. So that's, again, we're working off.
But your time,
Janet, you threw out a piece of information that's not on the text, so it's kind of taking us into a different direction. But it's
must
correct.
Have been somewhere.
Right. Right. But it's not. We have this mystery of what happens to David's family when he leaves them with Melech Moab. We never hear anything about them again.
Cease.
Right. And all we do is we're going to assume that something happened. We're going to come back to the piece of the Medrash, but we need to put together the pieces of the puzzle. The pieces of the puzzle are: A, we don't hear anything about them again. He never goes back to collect them. Number two, when he finally, years later, when he conquers Melech Moab, he treats them with exceptional cruelty. Mm. And add to that a couple of references to David's attitude towards Moab that appear kind of glimpses that appear in Sefer Tehillim. But glimpses. Again, nothing concrete, but glimpses. So if you take a look at the back on the source page, I've given you two of these references. One is, sorry, not in Tehillim. One is in Tehillim, the other is in Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu is less clear. It's talking about Moab. Pasuk Chef, Ayaka of Noded, Ken Mishulach, Diana Benot Moab, Mabot La'anon, shall be like a wandering bird, like scattered nestlings, the daughters of Moab. Havi Eitza, Asuflila, take counsel, execute judgment. Shiti Kalil Tzilech, make your shadow as the night in the midst of the day, Betoch Tzoraim. Satrini Dachim, hide the outcasts, Noded al Tegali, do not betray the wanderer. So, again, this is reference to Moab, where the Navi is saying to Moab, take counsel, execute judgment, hide the outcasts, don't betray the wanderer. Why would Yeshayahu have to say that to Melech, to the people of Ammon, of Moab, years, generations later? Okay, again, these are hints, allusions. Tehillim Perek Samach Tet. This is a Tehillim written by David. Lamatzach al Shoshanim le David. Hoshieni Elokim kibao mayim ad nafesh. Save me, God. Waters have come up to my soul, which is a idiomatic expression for I've reached the end of my tether. Tavati biven mitzula, I sink in the mire, in the depths, ve'en ma'amad ba'ati, there is no standing. Ma'amakei mayim v'shibolet shtafatni, I have come into deep waters, flood waters have flown over me. Yagati b'kor'i nichar groni kalu einai miyachel lelokai, I am weary of crying, my throat is parched, my eyes fail while I wait for my God. He's crying, he's desperate. Rabu misha'arot roshi, Misa'arot roshi, son'ai, those who hate me without cause, son'ai chinam, are more than the hairs of my head. Rabu misa'arot roshi, son'ai chinam, those who hate me without cause are greater than the hairs of my head. Atzmum matzmitai, those who would destroy me, my enemies. Oivai sheker, asher lo gazalti az ashiv, who are my enemies wrongfully. What did I do to? What I did not steal, must I restore? Like they, I didn't do anything to them, and they are there to destroy me. Elokim atayadati liivalti, God, you know my folly. Vashmotai mimcha lo nichadu, my sins are not hidden from you. Now it's interesting that David throws into this conversation a reference to, and his own anguish and his own pain and his own desperation as a response to.
Bathsheba?
No, this is long before Bathsheba. To his own sins. And that's the question we're going to come back to. Right? Ashmatai, that my sins are not hidden from you. Al yevoshi b'koivecha, let not those who seek you, who wait for you, who trust you, Hashem Elokim, Tzvakot, al yikalmu b'mevakshecha, Elokei Yisrael, let not those who seek you be ashamed for my sake. For your sake I have suffered insult, shame has covered my face. Muzar hayiti le'echai v'nochri livnei imi. I have become a stranger to my brothers and an alien to my mother's children. And easily that could be a reference to just his brothers, meaning the people of Israel. But ironically, right, this moment of his desperation, ki kinat beitcha achalatni v'cherpot chorfecha naflu alai, for zeal for your house has consumed me, and the taunts of those who taunted you have fallen upon me. I wept, chastened my soul with fasting, became a reproach to me. Sackcloth, my clothing, v'tnalevushi sak v'hi lahem l'mashal, became a proverb to them. Why is he sitting in sackcloth? Why is he mourning? Why is he fasting? Why is he so distraught? What happened here in this parak to make him so devastated? And this is where the Mefarshim struggle. What is going on in this parak? What's the backdrop to this parak? And the only reference we have is Muzar Hayiti Le'achai V'Nochri Livnei Imi. This estrangement to his family and to the children of his mother. What happened to his family? Is it his literal family? Or is this a general term for the state of the Jewish people or his brethren as a whole? Unclear. When I put all the pieces of the puzzle together, takes his family over to Moab with the expectation that because of his great-great-grandmother there's a family connection, they're going to treat him with hospitality. Safe haven. We never hear from them again. He treats Moab with exceptional cruelty. We have references in Tehillim. We have this reference in Tehillim to this estrangement to his family. Ki avi ve'imi azavuni ve'Hashem yasfeni, we say in the David, Shemori. What happened to his family? And here's where the Medrash will pick up, and it's a classic example of where Chazal will create a story midrashically, that seems to be based on just stories, right? What we would call the Medrash says, right? Bible stories. But when you start to break down the text and see that the foundation of a lot of these midrashim are actually a very careful analysis of the text, but with a clear piece of the puzzle missing. And it's that piece of the puzzle that Midrashim often come to fill in, what we call milui parim, to fill in that which is what the text leaves out. And the story appears, Rashi quotes it on his Perush, and the story appears in the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah. So let's take a look now at what the Medrash says. Moav Sir Rachatzi. Moav was a pot, a boiling pot sitting on the stove in which to cleanse. When David ran from Shaul, he took his father and his mother and his family and he took them over to Melech Moav. He was afraid of Shaul. And he placed his faith in them. He was sure that they would protect him. Why? Because there's a connection. That's why Moav is called a seer, a pot. Ma basa mitakel basir. What happens to pot, to meat, when you put it into a pot on the stove? It cooks, and it okay. Kach nik it achlu sham. So too, all of his family was consumed there. Shehorgam Melech Moav. Melech Moav executed them all, killed them all. V'lo nimlat mem el ach echad David. The only one who escaped was one brother. One brother. Shebarach etzel Nachash Melech Bnei Amon. Where did he run to?
Amon.
He ran to the neighbor. The neighbor of Moav is Amon. Shalach Melech Moav acharav. Melech Moav went seeking this brother out from Nachash Melech Bnei Amon. Ratzalitno. And Melech Amon refused to hand this single surviving brother over to Melech Moav. V'yahu ha-chesed she'asa Nachashim David. That's the chesed alluded to in the text that he did with David. L'fichach nitgaraim ha-Moavim. And that explains, says the Medrash, why when David fought against the Moabites, he did so cruelly. As it says, v'yachat Moav ha-yimadadim b'chevel ha-shkem otam arza v'yimadad shnei chavalim l'amit u'molo ha-chevel ha-achiyot v'ati'im Moav l'David l'avadim nosei mincha. It quotes the pasuk that I shared with you in Perak. So, and Rashi quotes this Medrash, including the part about Nachash Amoni, because it's a story, and again, it has no evidence, explicit evidence in the text, but it has a lot of circumstantial evidence, hints. The most powerful amongst them is that he never goes back for his family, and we never hear about his family ever again.
Happens to the brother.
We don't really know about this brother. We don't know anything about him. And I'll give you, I'll share with you a theory as to why I think the Medrash says that he had a brother who survived. Again, the brother's never heard from either. This is the Medrash, and how much of this Medrash is historically accurate, we'll never know. But we do know that something happened to his family there, and that's possibly why David reflects upon it later in Sefer Tehillim, where he says, "Muzar hayiti le'achai v'nochi le'bnei imi," that I was estranged to my own family, that I was distanced from my family, that I was. Again, if I leave out this medrash, he could be referring just to the fact that, as a young boy, his brothers fought with him and pushed him away. But given the circumstances here, there's a much more powerful explanation, which is that something happened to his family in Eretz Moav. And David never forgave himself for it.
Sure.
Remember, it's David blames, at least if I look at it from the perspective of Sefer Tehillim, blames himself.
Mm-hmm.
This is the low. One of the things we talked about in the previous story. These are the lowest points in David's life. Higiu mayim ad nafesh. David's desperate. David is sitting in sackcloth. David is sitting and crying. David is reflecting upon his own iniquity. Ashmotai mimcha lo nichadu. My own sins from you have not been hidden.
So he's talking about leaving his family there?
Either he's talking about leaving his family there, or he's talking about a broader canvas of the of the question, which is why all of this is happening. Somebody asked before why God isn't helping him, which is a... Right, Dina asked that question, which is another way of asking the question of what did David see? You're talking about an enormous, you're talking about an onesh, or an act of retribution that is enormous in its magnitude. In the world of Tanakh, these things don't happen without a cause. Post the world of Tanakh, it's a different arena. The concept of reward and punishment has a different meaning in the world of Tanakh than it does post the world of Tanakh. We've talked about that before. Right? As long as the existence of Nevi'im and the power of Nevuah and the purpose of Sefer of writing a text of Nevuah is to identify the process of Schar Va'onesh, of Chet Va'onesh, for reward and punishment, it's to see the operative system of reward and punishment in place. And so in Tanakh, you would not find a tragedy of such enormous proportion without some commensurate chet attributed to it. It's just not in the lexicon of Tanakh. To clarify again, post-Tanakh, post the close of prophecy, yes, we have no direct correlation or ability to identify a direct correlation between between an operative system of reward and punishment. Whereas in the world of Tanakh, certainly in the world of Nevi'im, Ketuvim you have Sefer Iyov, and you have sections in Sefer Tehillim which raise the question. In Ketuvim you struggle with that question. And not in Navi, not in Sefer Shmuel, not in Sefer Shoftim, not in Sefer Malachim. The world of the Nevi'im is a world in which they identified the Chet and the Onish which the Chet is attributed. And so the question we need to ask is, of a tragedy of such immense proportion, what brought it about? What was the cause? What was the issue? And there are two theories that I've seen that I think, to an extent, both of which are valid, powerful explanations to what's going on.
No.
What?
Was it Nov?
One is Nov. One is Nov, which would explain to an extent why this story and the sequence of stories is embedded in the middle of the story of Nov, even though, historically and chronologically, they're coming after the story of Nov. It's kind of a way of connecting the story. Now, why Nov? So take a look at the end of what happens with Nov. Let's take a quick glance back. Glance back at Perek Chaf Bet. Towards the end of the Perek, I'm going to skip the story itself because we'll come back to it and read it through in detail next week. But starting with Pasuk Girchet. Vayomer HaMelech Doeg, Sov Ata Uvega BaKohanim. King turns to Doeg, who was his informant, and he says to him, "You go and kill all the Kohanim." Vayisov Doeg Adomi, Vayifka Hu BaKohanim. Doeg Adomi goes and he kills all of the Kohanim. Vayamat Bayamahu, 85 Ish Nase Ifod Bad. 85 Kohanim are executed on the spot. Not only the Kohanim who served in the Mishkan, but the entire city, which was a city of Kohanim, descendants of the house of Eli, all destroyed. No survivors. Men, women, and child, animals, irini dachat, declared it city of idolatrous, equivalent to idolatry, treason. executes the entire city. Vayimalet ben echad la'achimelech ben achituv ushmo Evyatar. One child survived. One remnant, one survivor. Ben echad. His name was Achimelech ben... Sorry, his name was one child, ushmo Evyatar. His name was Evyatar ben Achimelech. That Evyatar is going to stay with us for the rest of the Sefer. Vayivrach acharei David. He ran to David. Vayaged Evyatar le David, ki erag Sheul et Kohanei Hashem. Evyatar told David what happened. Vayomer David le Evyatar. Now imagine what's going through David's head. It was he who had gone to Nov. It was he who had requested of Achimelech food and weapons, all under the guise of some fictitious mission of Shaul, but in order to protect Avyatar, protect Achimelech, but clearly that didn't help. Vayomer David l'Avyatar, Yadati bayom ahu, kisham do'eg adomi, ki aged yagid de Shaul. I knew when I saw do'eg there, I knew that he was going to inform on me to David, to Shaul. I just knew it. Anochi saboti b'chol nefesh betavicha. I am responsible for the destruction of your household, of your father's house.
Because he was recognized?
Because he blamed himself for endangering the entire city of Nov, because he knew Shaul's wrath. He knew Shaul's wrath, and he knew that he was going there at great risk. And the moment he saw Doeg Adomi, remember, he saw Doeg Adomi and then he asked for a weapon. He had this sinking suspicion that this was not going to end well. And so he says, I clearly blame, now, whether he was in fact guilty of a crime there, whether or not, right, he can blame himself for Shaul's madness and for Shaul's craziness, unclear. But certainly he saw that on himself. Shva iti, al tira, stay with me, don't be afraid. Ki kasher yivakesh et nafshi yivakesh et nafshecha ki mishmeret atai imadi. David takes an oath to Evyatar that from that day forward, Evyatar will be under David's protection. Anybody who seeks your life is going to have to seek my life. Who seeks my life will seek your life. I will protect you with my life. As the last remnant of Nov, David owes him a debt of protection, and he will risk his life to save his. So from that perspective, he clearly saw Nov as a tragedy that is at least in part due to his own carelessness. Not a chet in the sense of a moral lapse, but a chet in terms of a carelessness with the lives of others. Not, therefore, out of the realm of possibility that the subsequent tragedies that befell him, whether it be in Achish or in Moab in particular, David saw as a kind of a retribution for the carelessness with which he dealt with Nov. That is entirely possible. Stories would have needed to be out of it would have been more powerful if the stories were in reverse order. But nonetheless, I think the Medrash drew our attention to the link between these two. How does the Medrash connect these two? It's very interesting method. The Medrash itself, that talks about the death of Shaul's, death of David's family. The Medrash hints to a connection between the fall of the execution of David's family and the guilt that he has in the hand of the story of Nov. How? Who survives Nov?
Just one kid.
What's the language?
The son of Avimelech.
Yeah. What's the pasuk? Interesting pasuk. Let's put this up here. Vayimalet ben echad la'achimelech ushmo
Ben Avyatar.
Go on.
Vayivrach acharei David.
Vayivrach
acharei David.
Acharei David. Okay. Vaimalet, ben echad Lachim Melech, Shmuel Avyatar, Vayivrach, Acharei David.
Isn't there one brother left?
Now go back to the Medrash and the language of the Medrash about
the
fall of the family.
Is one brother left also?
Look at the language of the Medrash. Velo nimlat mehem. Velo nimlat mehem. Go on.
Ella ach achad.
Ella ach echad.
Shabarach. Shabarach etzel nachash.
Shabarach etzel nachash. Interesting language. Nimlat ach echad. Ben echad laachim melech. Ach echad, ben echad laachim melech. Right, see the play in words.
And David's
shebarach etzel nachash. Vayimalet ben echad laachim melech vayivrach acharei David. So linguistically, midrashim will often do that. They'll take pieces of a story and embed them, sew them through another part of the story to link to events. If you go back to the number of times we talked about Midrashim borrowing stories from Tanakh and superimposing them in other places, right? The Kivshana Eish by Avram Avinu and the story in Daniel, etc. Okay, here you have the story of the fall of the destruction of David's family in the hands of Moab, and this reference to Lo Nimlat Mehem Ela Ach Echad LeDavid Shebarach Etzel Nachash. And in the story, you can't help but hear Vayimalet Ben Echad LaAchi Melech. Echad. Ben Echad L'Achi Melech Vayivrach Achad David. This moment of the remnant of Nov, sort of one survivor of Nov, one survivor of David's family. And you hear where the Medrash is trying to connect. There is an element of trying to link the story of Nov to the tragedy of Nov to the story of the tragedy of David's family.
So do you think it was carelessness?
David certainly did, and to some extent that's all that matters. I don't know. I think that David certainly did, and we won't make that mistake again. Right. I'll throw out you one additional possibility, and it won't take us long, it'll do literally 30 seconds. There's another possibility. That the reason why David's family is killed in Moab, it's not because of Nov. Remember, this story is before the story of Nov. It's written before the story of Nov. But there could be another reason why David's family is destroyed. And that's a much broader canvas. The last time we saw a moment of tragedy, a moment of crisis, a moment of significant hardship in the land of Israel, and the key player run to Chutz La'aretz to escape that tragedy, and not only run to Chutz La'aretz, but run to the land of Moab in Chutz La'aretz to escape that tragedy, the result was the total destruction of his family. Mm. Sound familiar?
Yeah. Okay.
It's the opening story of Megillat Rut.
Yeah.
And the reason for the destruction of his family and Naomi's family was because he ran to Chutz La'aretz, because he ran to Eretz Moab. The crisis is happening in the land of Israel. The tragedy is taking place in the land of Israel. And Achimelech turned his back on them and ran to the land of the enemy, to the land of Moab. So from that perspective, the tragedy of David's family may be in fact a retribution for David's repeating the chet of Ahimelech, which would explain why the moment David deposits his family at Moab, the next reaction comes from in the text. Who's the
Moab.
Next? After he deposits in the text, he deposits his family by Moab. The next reaction is
God.
The Navi doesn't speak to David unless there's a chet involved.
Wow.
The two places where the Navi speaks is in retribution, is an acknowledgement of a terrible chet that David has to rectify by the counting of Bnei Israel in the end of Sefer Shmuel Bet, and here, Al Teshev Bamtzuda, don't hide. your job is not to hide. Your job is not to go off into chutzlats. Your job is not to seclude yourself. Your job is to begin to raise an army and to raise the leadership of Israel. Come back to Eretz Yehudah. That's where you belong. And that's the message to David. Enough
Why doesn't
he running
to take his family, though? Why did we leave him there?
It could be that it's already after.
Because
that's the role of a because that's where Bechira and the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im don't work that way. That would be a total denial of the role of the Nevi is to react to our behavior, not to quite work that way. But anyway, that I think is the other piece of the story.
People tell me beforehand what would be a good thing to do, and then I yell at the answer, and I made a big mistake.